You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Well, good evening to you, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. It is the 10th of December, 2024, and more importantly, it is Technology and Innovations Tuesday, right? And we are getting into our segment today. And very interestingly today, we're talking about the future automotive technologies. That is the future automotive technologies there. Now, the future of the automotive industry is here. And it's quite interesting to think that those of you who are as young as I am, a couple of years ago, back in the days, we used to speak about, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. I remember when you're talking about Philip is here as well. We always said these things are coming. And to live in the era where these things are happening, is in itself, I suppose, mind-boggling, bringing trends of electrification, autonomous vehicles as well. We're seeing that artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things, machine learning and sustainability in what may be the most exciting time for automotive innovation since the inception of the motor car. We've come a very long way in the automotive sector. And in this conversation, we are going to see some of the main trends that will be derivatives of the automotive technology in this near future that we are in, and how practical they may be for the African market. And who else to help us understand that than our elder? It is Imen Nyirenda, who is joining us at this evening. Good evening, sir. Welcome to the show once again.
Good evening to you, Tapelo, and good evening to the listeners.
Ah, how are you?
Not too bad. I'm happy and excited to be talking about something that's close to my heart.
Ah, I know. Remembering the conversation that we once had, I'm like, yes, who else to help us understand this than you? So really appreciate your time. We were just talking about NDF fatigue. Has it crept in on you?
Of course, every day feels like a week.
Yeah.
But 2025 is knocking on the door.
It is. I mean, I think that's like the oddest thing, right? We talk about going away as if January is not 2 weeks from now. It's literally 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. And of course, spending more time with the kids means, you're going to have to pull out your hairs.
Exactly.
For some of their behavior.
Mischievous, those ones. But eh?
it's going to be a good time to catch up with friends and family.
Ah, lovely. Are you traveling?
Not traveling.
Just catching up with family, right?
Yes.
Ah, fantastic. Really, really appreciate that. Well, thank you so much, sir, for joining us once again. And I really appreciate you. I was just saying that just a few years ago, we were talking about it's coming. But the future is here, particularly in the automotive sector.
Yes, that is correct on so many levels. Yeah, there's some things which were preempted perhaps by TV, and we were watching TV shows and we'd see certain things and we thought, yo, that's so science fiction.
Yeah.
And now they're part of our lives.
They're part of our lives, eh?
Yes.
I mean, the other day I saw a video on this social media platform, right? And I think it was delivering food, one of these e-hailing apps, but not here in South Africa. I saw it in America. And there was these two gentlemen that were in their old age, so to speak. The other one looked like he was 80 and the other one was 90. So they had requested for a ride and this autonomous car came, which was going to be their e-hailing car, and it was going to take them to their place. I remember vividly watching that video. The way these two old men were so scared, they were like, where's the driver? Like, no, there's no driver here. The car was literally driving itself. And these are things, like you're saying, we thought they were fiction. Now they are here.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about some of these things and what has informed them and and where we'll be in the next 10 years, perhaps preempt what could happen
in the next 10 years. Old age. Yeah. Okay, let's start at the back then. Please help us understand the history, and maybe one or two lessons from past innovations that you see in the automotive industry. What has the past looked like?
Okay, if we are to go back, maybe not even so far back.
Yeah.
Some of us were born in the 80s.
Yeah.
And when we came around and, you know, you started wanting to help your dad with his car or tinker, you know, help him with this and that. We had cars that had carburetors.
Yep.
And every now and then you needed to clean out the carb and, you know, get a can of carb cleaner or get some paraffin or diesel or whatever and clean out the carb and, you know, set it and do all those kinds of things. And time has moved from that. Things are now more computer controlled because that's more accurate.
So
you remember there was a time when every manufacturer would, you know, brag about the fact that their fuel, the car's fuel injection, and it would be written there 1.6 fuel injection, or 1.6 16 valve fuel injected, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
those were things that were, I guess, our parents back in the day thought, you know, this is just too much trouble for me. I want something simple that I can fix.
Yeah,
but we're coming to a time now where it's harder and harder to find spares for those things and to find the people who know how to fix or set those things. So it's becoming more of an art to run an old car. You find garages that are actually just in business just from setting carburetors or, you know, taking your carburetor and setting it for you and putting it on your car so that your car is properly tuned and that kind of stuff. So things have moved from there because of emissions laws. We have been held more and more accountable as car users for the amount of pollution that we're putting into the environment. And the governments are also becoming ever stricter about, you know, the amount of emissions that they'd allow from a 1.6, from a 2 liter, from a whatever size engine. And I understand from a friend or a brother who's living in the UK that actually if you drive a car that's bigger than a 2.2 litre, you're not allowed into the centre of London.
Oh, my.
You must use public transport. So that's where everyone else is going. And we can see this because in our towns or the likes of Joburg and Pretoria, we have what is this, Rea Vaya, and what's the other one? I can't remember the name for the Tshwane equivalent. But those are things that, you know, cities are putting in place to try and keep pollution away from the city centers. So next year, July, I'm not sure of the exact date, if it's going to be on the first or the last day of July, but Euro 7 is going to be implemented. So if you remember, we've had Euro 5, Euro 6, and all those were, you know, laws that were put in place to try and reduce emissions or force manufacturers to come up with cars that are more fuel efficient. If we were to take an example for the sake of our viewers or our listeners, there was a time when a BMW 330 meant that you're driving a big engine, a six-cylinder 3 liter, and you know you'd enjoy the sound and you know. That was nice. And you drove maybe a 4 liter V8 and that was something that you could manage. But now you find that even the big cars are now using 2 liter four cylinders that are turbocharged. And the smaller cars have moved to engines that are now three cylinders and 1.4s, 1.3s and that kind of thing. And they're also turbocharged. So that's where technology is going. Everything that has been done in this area of car development has all been affected by emission standards.
That's interesting. So is it emissions that drive innovation, or that innovation is driven, I suppose, by consumer preference, particularly in the automotive sector? Because you raise a really important point there around how environmental laws are becoming very pronounced in different countries, states, and in some much more pronounced, and there's even penalties and all those sort of stuff. I know with South Africa there's the tax and all that, but is it really environmental issues that are driving innovation, or really innovation is a thing of, well, people want much more cleaner things.
Well, I'd say the two are working hand in hand. I think that, you know, manufacturers are, I mean, Mercedes will always want to one-up BMW and one-up Audi and all that kind of stuff. And everyone wants to have the bragging rights that, no, our 2 liter uses only so many liters of fuel per 100 kilos. That those are big bragging rights for some of us who are consumers. You know, you want to know that if I put in petrol for 500, I can drive all the way up to Cape Town, for instance. Because that's you know, that's something you can brag about. That I've only spent 500 and I've made it up to this far. But on the other hand, no one likes spending money, and especially businesses. Businesses don't just spend money for the sake of let's spend this money. So it's something that is pushed by environmentalists who are constantly knocking on the doors of manufacturers saying, no, but you guys think about the environment and what we're going to leave for those who come after us. And that the bragging rights of manufacturers and the stricter rules are working for the betterment of technology or pushing technology forward.
And I've heard that this other manufacturers announced that they are moving away from fossil fuel cars next year or the year after that. Is that also environmentally driven?
Yes, these were environmental concerns, but also there's been a push from governments to try and at one stage, let's just move back a bit. If, for example, there's a company like a Toyota who has maybe, for instance, 100 cars, the government will give them a target that as a manufacturer, this is how much all your cars should be, your average of all your cars should have this emissions output. So then in their mix, they'll have 1.3s, they'll have 1.1s, they'll have a few V6s, a few six cylinders, a few V8s, and all that is informed by what the government has put for them as a target. So you found the likes of, I think some of you might remember at one stage that there was an Aston Martin who tried to buy a Toyota. It was a Toyota Ego and sell it as an Aston Martin. It was called an Aston Martin Signet, but it was basically a Toyota just dressed as an Aston Martin. All that was trying to do was that so that Aston Martin can meet a certain target. They have a few V12s, a few V8s, and maybe a small car. So that has happened and that has come and gone. On the other hand, governments have also made it a law that when you sell a car, you should be able to tell me as a consumer that this is how much you're polluting the environment. So you get those stickers on the window that will tell you that, no, you're driving 1.6 and that's how much emissions it puts out. At the end of the day, they're trying I'm not sure whether it's companies trying to push the blame or the responsibility to us as consumers. So that most of us are now feeling the guilt that, no, maybe I need to buy an electric car. Even if I don't like an electric car, maybe I should buy one just for the sake of the environment, you know, that kind of thing. But actually, it's supposed to be manufacturers who are supposed to be driving this technology forward and saying, we want to be responsible corporate citizens so that, you know, if you buy any of our cars, you're not worried about, you know, what you're doing to the environment. You should be able to buy any car and say, no, I'm doing the best I can.
I'm doing the best
with what I have.
And those electric cars don't look really appealing aesthetically, that is.
Perhaps because of also things like what you call this aerodynamics. They need to have certain types of tires that reduce rolling resistance. They need to have a certain shape that, you know, cuts through the air as efficiently as possible. All those things inform, you know, what the final product will be. But I guess that most of us as petrol heads or people who love cars, cars are not just about moving from one
Yeah,
point
no,
to
they're
another.
not.
We experience them through our ears.
No, they're not.
We experience them through, you know, visually. We experience them through what we touch inside and all those things. All the senses need to be engaged in order for you to say, I've had a nice drive in my car.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think for gents, more especially, it's not just a car. But there's the other things for gents. It's a pulling up car. It's when you go out with the gents, it must allow you to do this and that. So it's not just a car. I'm just buying a car for the sake of moving from point A to B. Yeah, I want to move from point A to B, but I want to move in style. But moving in style in this instance might mean a lot of pollution, eh?
Yeah. So I guess we need to. Everybody's working towards a cleaner environment.
Yeah.
I'm not. You know, when we're talking about the car industry, we're not only talking about, you know, the Toyotas, the Mercedeses, the BMWs. We're talking about the Shells, the Caltexes.
Yes.
Everybody is. Every other day, you find an ad that says it's cleaner for your car. It cleans your car as you drive, or it's better for the environment. It's less emissions and all those things. So everybody is trying to get to a point where they feel that, you know, they're being responsible with the environment.
Yeah. Okay, that's much better. I think that's a good way of doing business. In fact, it shows, at least research, that it creates a competitive advantage for any business if they are very much environmentally aware and socially aware, and they've got good governance system in place to make sure that those things are also taken. So that makes good business and gives one business a competitive advantage. I want us to get into the trends. But before the trends, then, let's look at the next coming few years. You had already touched a little bit on that. But if we were to just itemize it for our listeners, what are we seeing in the next coming few years in terms of automotive technologies?
Okay. The big thing, like we said, is you know, efficiency and trying to pollute less. So we said that next year Euro 7 is being introduced that will have even stricter emissions. So you might see the likes of cars that you've gotten accustomed to being 2 liters going down maybe to 1.6s. Certain tires being smaller on certain cars or whatever the case may be, all that we'll be trying to do is to try and make the car use the liter of fuel a bit longer as far as the road is concerned. But if we are really to look into what is going to happen as far as cars are concerned, then we need to look at automotive racing. As much as people see or think that, you know, racing is just pointless, men spending millions of rands, you know, on cars and racing around and getting bragging rights of who won or who was the last one or who was on the podium, all those things. But the technology that we see in our cars today has been proven and honed on racetracks all around the world. That includes your tires, that includes your steering wheel. All those things come from racing. So at some stage we didn't have any buttons on our steering wheels. Remember the time when a steering wheel was just a steering wheel for turning the car? Now you can adjust your volume on your steering wheel, you can adjust your radio on your steering wheel. All those things was because somebody in a race in a racing suit somewhere said, no, I don't want the distraction of taking my hands away from the steering wheel and going to adjust something. Please put everything on the steering wheel for me. So that is some of those benefits. Tires also have become a thing that, you know, tires last a bit longer than they used to because of the technology of rubber companies that would say, no, I need a tire that can do this and this. And we have seen also that, you know, in the game to try and gain 1 second lap from your competitors, people have gone away from what you call these turbochargers that are driven by exhausts or belts or driven alternators that are driven by belts, but they're actually now driven by electricity, which is even quicker to spool up. So that You don't need to get a car up to a certain speed in order for you to feel that the turbocharger is working, because that has always been a thing that, you know, a turbocharger takes time to pick up and, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So we're now using electricity for those things. They're not in our ordinary cars of today, but they're in those, you know, Porsches, Ferraris are using those technologies. It will be some time before they trickle down to our cars.
Yeah.
And you'll find in the next maybe 5 years, we'll be having a small 1.1 car that has an electric turbocharger. And that will be better for your pocket at the pumps. And then we're also finding that because of this thing that I talked about of competitiveness, that companies are now pushing for, let's put it like this.
Yeah.
If you had 10 rands of fuel, it's not all that fuel that is going to go into turning the wheels. Some of it will go into turning parts that are turning the engine. Some of it will go into parts that are turning the propeller shaft in order to turn the wheels. Some of it will go into what is going to turn the gearbox and all those things. So maybe from that 10 rands, you'll find that you're only using 35 rands, 3 rand 50, for instance, towards mobility. But we're finding that in the racing world, people are getting up to 50% or 5 rands of their 10 rands that is now being used to move the car, propel the car forward. That is something that is very big for most of us, because if you're going to put in 500 rands worth of petrol and only use 350 of it, and the rest of it is burnt as friction and whatever, it means that if somebody comes up with a car that you can now get up to a stage where you're using now 400 rands of that towards moving the car, that is a big improvement. That is a big improvement, and it's a big thing for the environment.
It definitely is.
There's also things like six-stroke engines that we've heard about. So without being too technical, if you have a lawnmower, an old lawnmower, an old motorbike, those ones that make noise, it's a two-stroke. Those use a lot of fuel. But they tend to give you a bit more power, because every other stroke is a power stroke. If you are going to have a four-stroke engine, then one of those will only be a power stroke.
Okay.
So six-stroke engines are giving you two strokes for every cycle of the engine, which also speaks to efficiency of how you're using the fuel that you're putting into your car. These are things that will start, of course, with the expensive cars, but eventually every one of us will have a car that is a six stroke, and you know, we're using a bit more fuel than, you know, just burning things and taking out of the exhaust.
Definitely.
And then we find that lubricants are now a bit better at lubricating our cars.
Yeah.
You remember that at some stage, probably if you were a boy, your dad would say to you before you go to school, go into the garage and start the car. And then he start the car, and then he has his coffee, and then after he's had his coffee or his tea or whatever, then you drive off. Because the owner's manual would tell you that, no, you need to warm up the car and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We are now at a stage where oil is so thin that as soon as you start the car, there's oil already moving throughout the engine. And you see that 0W20 oils, 0W15 oils, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Those are also speaking to technology. So we're at a stage where you don't necessarily have to start a car, you know, for 5 minutes and then drive off. You see that even now, a car has stop-start, you know.
Yeah.
You step off the gas and you put your foot on the brake and the car just switches off.
And it just
off.
Moves, exactly.
Yes, and as soon as the robot opens and you put your foot on the accelerator, the car starts moving. It shows you that, you know, lubricants have become much better than what they were in the past. And then we find that things that were previously only the reserve of the very expensive cars. Remember that there was a time when the big Audi A8s, Mercedes S-Class, Lexus LS were the only cars that, you know, if you had your key with you, you could, step out of the car and the car would park itself, or you could call it from wherever you were and it would come to you, and that kind of thing. We're going to get to a stage where those things are available, and even the smallest of cars, your Polos, your Yarises, and all those things will all have that technology. In a nutshell, that's about what we can look forward to in the future.
I mean, thank you so much for that, because I think you've almost answered the question around autonomous cars, the future of cars and where cars are going to be. It's actually great to see that there'll be some level of equality between your, I suppose, the current cars that are seen to be low class, or, not your German cars, for example, because those would be
Entry-level
entry-level
cars, yeah.
cars. Yes, they are also catching up, and we are trying to find a way to take this, what, V eight what cylinders and put them in the smaller ones, but in a way that makes them to also work in that smaller car. Suppose we are all, well, the manufacturers are trying to find a way to make the driving experience of everyone, I suppose, entry level cars and your more advanced cars into more seamless, lovable. You can move certain things around. I mean, that stop start thing is in itself an amazing thing, right? And the other day I was talking to a friend of mine who said, "No, man, I switched off this thing because really it just annoys me." But I was like, that saves you petrol. That's the
Saving
whole
you fuel,
point.
yes.
Exactly, so that you pay a little bit less for petrol because you're standing there by the robot. Some robots even take longer these days. I mean, a robot is like 2 minutes, you're still braking. And if you don't have that stop start, it's chowing a little bit of petrol in there, and you're stationary, which is really not great. So this stop start thing is an amazing innovation, at least in my mind as well. Do you think that these things are going to shape people's preference for certain cars in the near future? Autonomous cars, self-driving cars, and the other stuff that you've just mentioned right now. Are people going to gravitate towards those, or because of the law, we are naturally forced to gravitate towards, I suppose, the future cars?
Okay, it's a bit of a it's a bit of a there's no right way or bad way to answer this one, but I think you will find that actually the people for whom this is meant for, okay. Usually, the technology will come in at a higher price because the manufacturer needs to recoup his costs for developing this technology and rolling it out. But the funny thing is that when you get to that stage of being economically able to afford such technology, then it becomes one of those things that you drive your BMW 330 or your C300 or your C350 during the week. But you'll find that most guys will then have a car that they use as a project. Maybe on the weekend, they'll go and buy a Holden Commodore and try and restore it as a car that they just enjoy for just being a car, because it reminds them of their youth, reminds them of their childhood, it reminds them of their dad, or it reminds them of whatever. So it's a bit, it's a bit, I don't know how to put it, because the people who are supposed to take this technology and make sure that it spreads across everybody and becomes available for everybody are the very ones who can actually afford to say, "No, I actually don't want this. I want a proper old Ford Cortina with a V6 3 liter, or a Holden Commodore with a V8 4 liter and only three speeds, that kind of thing." So it becomes a bit of a, one of those things that, somehow it will balance itself out. By the time most of us can afford the technology, I think that, it will balance out those who have actually been rebellious and said, "No, I don't want this. I want an old school Hilux. I'm going to put in a V8 in it, and I don't want any new technology telling me what to do or how to drive my car," that kind of thing. So it will somehow balance itself out with
Indeed.
The more it rolls out, the more people are, feeling that, "No, this is too too rigid for me to follow, or too rigid. I don't want to be told how to drive or what to do. I want an old car that has no technology. Somehow it will balance itself out.
Isn't technology supposed to then bring down the costs of buying these cars? Because if you look at technological advancements in, I suppose, other industries, it has made certain industries to be accessible. It has made certain products to be accessible to the everyday person, whereas without those technologies, those things would not be accessible. But it seems like in the car automotive space, for example, the technology is just making these things a whole lot expensive every single time. Not only, you know, given the fact that car prices go up every year, but any new model over and above that is going to go up because it's an annual increase. This technology makes these cars more expensive.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. For instance, if you were to buy a brand new, say, B segment car, let's call that maybe a Polo, and you buy maybe the most expensive one, maybe the GTI, and it has, you know, it will share some technology with the bigger brothers, the GTI, the Golf GTI, some of those things will be there just, you know, as a, you know, to keep you within the brand, to show you that if you actually bought a bigger car than this one, this is what you could enjoy. And on the other hand, if somebody was to take your car, say after 4 years you can afford a new car, and you decide that no, I'm trading up, you buy a Golf GTI, or you buy a Passat, or you buy whatever that could be available at that time or at that price point. Whoever's going to buy your car is now introduced to this technology, but now they have to deal with the issues, you know, because you had the car when it was new, it was still under warranty, and all those things. This guy now has to deal with all these issues because now the car becomes, as it grows older, then certain things don't work, and you know, that kind of thing. And the manufacturer can only, I think that the law is that they must have the support and the backup, after sales backup, for any technology or for any car for the next 15 years. So after 15 years, whatever it is that is giving you issues, you should have sorted it out, or you should know what to do. And technology has moved far forward than what you know, what you were in 10 years ago. So it's ever moving goalposts. It's ever moving goalposts. But at the end of the day, you know, this is what keeps us going. As human beings, we are never to rest on our laurels and say, no, we have.
As we draw to a close, then I want to ask then, particularly the African context then. I mean, I think we are pretty much the continent of the future, if you come to think about it economically, politically, and otherwise. Yes, we're having issues right now, but the average median age in the African continent is, the last time I checked, 21, you know. And you look at the rest of the world, it's an aging population in the rest of the world. So clearly, Africa is going somewhere. Now, these technologies, in the context of Africa and where Africa is going, how relevant are these, and how must we adapt them to the African market?
Well, I think I have, you know, you grow used to doing things in a certain way, because of the environment you're in. And in the context of South Africa, we know that we have garages, and you know, if you have an issue, you take your car, if you drive a Volvo, you take it to a Volvo dealer, or not even a Volvo dealer, but a Volvo specialist, and they'll plug in their computer, and you know, it would tell them in no time that, you know, your issue is 1, 2, 3, and they'd be able to sort you out, or at least to give you a quote and say, no, if you need this sorted out, this is what it's going to cost. But I have traveled to certain parts of the continent where such things are not, are luxuries. People don't have the luxury of a diagnostic computer to tell them that this is the issue with your car, and people will just, or just bypass the system. If I find that I'm having an issue with this a sat nav which is constantly talking and telling me this is what you need to do and all that kind of stuff, or please service your car after 10,000 kilos and I don't have the money to do that, or I don't have the time, or I don't have the skills, or I can't afford the car because it was a car from a higher price point than I'm used to. People just cut the wires and, you know, make sure that this thing never makes noise for me anymore and make it work. So somehow we find, you know, we are very, what do I say?
Behind?
Adaptive. We adapt to the situation, but our adaptation does not necessarily mean that we're going to continue trying to make the technology work. We'll just, you know, find a way to live without it.
Yeah.
As long as the car is moving forward and all these other things are secondary. All.
Yeah.
Life goes on.
that's an interesting one there. So do you find that it's the more, I suppose, less developed African countries where you find such things, where I just want a car that moves, where else in maybe your more affluent South Africa, you know, Kenya, maybe Nigeria and all that, they are kind of wanting these comforts that come with these cars, not just a car that moves me from point A to B.
Yes, and I'm not, you know, maybe I shouldn't even have made it about other African countries. It happens in every economy. It happens in every economy. If you were to take your car and they said to you, no, in order for you to update your Google Maps on your sat nav, you need to give us 10,000 so we can upload new software for you and whatever. Most people just say, no, I don't have 10,000 for software. I've got a phone that's got data. I mean, I can use that.
Exactly.
Can you disable whatever sat nav you have on the system so it doesn't make noise for me? And it will happen, you know. Somebody might buy your car and it had that issue that you'd been living with for the last 5 years. And they would say, or maybe go to the dealer and ask them, how can I get rid of this issue? And they tell them, no, actually, we're not even supporting that car anymore, or we are beyond updates for that car. We can give you the latest and you see how you deal with that. But others will find that, you know, there are other guys who are not necessarily part of the dealer network. And I'm happy that there's now a law that says that you're not forced, if you drive a Volvo, to go to a Volvo dealer. As long as there's an RMI dealer somewhere, you can always go to them.
Yeah.
And Volvo should be able to help them to get you back on the road.
Yes.
So that has made motoring a bit more accessible for every one of us.
That's lovely.
So I guess it's just one of those things that, you know, make sure that what is important to you gets taken care of, and life goes on.
Lovely. Okay, what an interesting topic there. What an interesting topic. How do we sum it up then? What would be your final thoughts with these future vehicles and all these beautiful, nice things that are happening? And before you answer that, I must be honest with you. I love comfort. So I'm one of those that will like these new technologies and future cars. I'm not so sure that I want my car to drive me, because I still enjoy the art of driving, because it really gives me some level of comfort. So I might just be a generation away from letting a car drive me. But I love the comforts. I love the new things that are coming through. And the future cars that are also coming, I really love them. Any final thoughts from yourself?
Well, final thoughts are that, you know, we will have different people that manufacturers need to cater to. We have a Tapelo and an Emmanuel who would rather have the steering wheel right between their fingers.
Exactly.
And we'll have others who would think, no, what a boring chore, what a task. I mean, if I could get somebody to do this for me, I could sit behind with my laptop and do something. But at the end of it all, I mean, there will be different manufacturers. I think you have seen that, actually, as much as we talk about electric vehicles and new, what do they call this? New age vehicles. There have been manufacturers who have said, no, we're going to hold back on that. Toyota being one, for example, who said, no, we'd rather stick with our internal combustion engines and put hybrids on them just to make them more fuel efficient.
Yeah.
So there will be a market for every one of
Definitely.
Us. Those of us who want the comforts with the butler and everyone taking care of you, and you just sitting back and folding back your seat, you will have somebody who will cater to you. If you want somebody who can sell you a car where you can still drive and listen to the sound from the exhaust pipe, there will be someone who's still doing that. And at the end of it all, even if that comes to an end, there will still be people who will have old cars for sale who will say to you, I can sell you an old V8 from the 1970s.
Yeah.
Give me so much and it's all yours, you know.
Yeah.
But when all is said and done, technology moves forward. We can still engage with TVs that are smart, but there are still people who will still find that, you know, I still prefer my radio that you wind and that kind of thing. The market caters for both.
It caters for everyone, doesn't leave anyone behind. Well, sir, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you. Here's to the best in terms of the holiday season. And we really, really appreciate you having, showed up on our show this particular year. Really appreciate your insights. You speak about cars, man, like you're speaking about socks and, these everyday things that we wear. And it's such an amazing conversation. You mentioned V12 and six cylinder as if you're reading them from a book. I'm like, man, I must get to this level with cars because I also love cars, but I don't think I'm at that level where you are. You speak about them like you're changing socks, but it's such a beautiful, beautiful conversation. But we wish you nothing but the best for your holiday season, and we hope to connect with you once again in the new year.
No, thank you very much. I'm always at your service.
Thank you so much, sir. Really appreciate it. Have a good one.
Same to you.
Thank you so much. That was, of course, our elder there, Eamon, talking to us about cars as if we are just having a beautiful story, right? Yeah, man, I love it. Love it.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.